Doug Fry, Real 10. We're talking about when you arrived at Homark Sanatorium, Frankfurt. It's the hospital attached to Dulag Luft,
yes,
the interrogation centre. And that's still September 1943. Now, yes, what happened while you were there?
We went upstairs in there was a long corridor, and along this corridor were the heaps of clothing with other chaps that had arrived, including Americans, and we were all we all disrobed there, and we were going to have a bath. There was a bathroom at the end of this corridor. I thought, that's great. I've not been immersed in water for over 6 weeks or more. And so we were all undressed, and then it became my turn to go into the bathroom. Turned the hot water on, and after about half an inch or so of water, or a quarter of an inch of water in the bottom of the bath, the hot water ran out completely, so I ended up with a cold bath. But that was, I enjoyed that anyway, because it was so refreshing. When we came out of there, they gave us a nightshirt, a long nightshirt, and put us into, there were four of us into this room, a very comfortable room with a wash basin, and so on in there, comfortable beds, wonderful. And so we got ourselves into bed, and then the German doctor came round and had a look at us, and had a look at my wound, and by now it was okay, but he put another small dressing on it. And so we just waited to see what was going to happen next. Well, after a couple of days, I was called out into the corridor, and went up the end of the corridor, and at the end there was a window, and there was a small table there, and a couple of chairs, and there was a Luftwaffe officer sitting there, and he had before him these forms. So I sat down, and he, "Good morning, Mr. Fry," he said, and he said, "Will you fill in one of these forms?" And it was a Red Cross, so-called Red Cross one, but we knew about these things, and so I just filled in my name, rank and number. And he said, "Well, you should fill in the rest of the stuff," he said, "because we've got to let your people at home know what's happening to you, and we need all this information." I said, "No, sorry, I can't give you all that." He wanted squadron number and so on and so forth, you see. I said, "No, sorry, I can't give you all that." So he just said, "All right," and he let me go. So,
these weren't really Red Cross forms at all?
Oh, no, they were bogus. Yeah, bogus. But they had Red Cross at the top and all that sort of stuff, you know. So I thought, oh, God, I've got away with that. That's jolly good. If that's all there is to it, no problem. So I went back to the room, and then after a while we got our clothes back, and we were then allowed to... Oh, no, before that, I was moved to a room on my own, another very comfortable room, nice comfortable bed, once more wash basin and so on in there. And I've been in there a couple of days, and there was a knock on the door, and in comes this immaculate German officer with a big folder in his under his arm, and he sat himself down by the bed. Good morning. He introduced himself, asked me where I'd lived and so on. He said, "Oh, I was educated in Oxford," he said. "I like England." I thought, well, that was softening up process. And so then he opened up his file. Inside, it was a file on 15 Squadron, my squadron. Inside, there was a picture of the squadron crest, amazingly. And then on the top sheet was all the names of the crew, and four of them had crosses against them. And his opening words were, "I'm afraid four of your crew were killed." And I said straight away that, yes, I thought they were. I had the feeling, well, I mean, we knew about all, you know, we used to get briefed on the squadron about all these things by our intelligence officer, so we knew there'd be softening up and all that sort of stuff. So he then went on to tell me when I'd gone into the Air Force and where I'd trained, every place that I'd trained at, and then when I got posted to the squadron. So I didn't say anything or nod my head or anything, I just let him talk. And then he started asking the pertinent questions. What time did we take off? When did we cross the coast? What time on target? What altitude? What sort of bombs? What sort of markers? All the pertinent information. I could have answered all this, But I said, no, it's a long time ago. And it was a long time ago. It seemed ridiculous to me to interrogate somebody, try and get information from them, when they've had 6, 7, or 8 weeks to gather their scattered wits, as it were, and think out answers to anything that may be chucked at them. So I thought it was ludicrous. But nevertheless, it was quite a pleasant 10 minutes, I suppose, chatting to this chap. And so I just said, well, I don't know anything about all this stuff. I said, it was a long time ago, and I was badly wounded. And I said, in any event, I was a gunner, and I don't know anything about markers and so on, which was a lie. So he just, there was a pause, and he closed his file up. I said, thank you, Mr. Fry. Goodbye. And he was gone. So that was that. That was my interrogation. Lying in bed, would you believe? In a nice, comfortable bed. Strange, really.
And you weren't threatened at all?
No threats whatsoever. No threats whatsoever. So I'd missed out on the cells and all that business. Because if they were in, the chaps who used to go put in the cells, they used to get the treatment there. You know, more rations and so on. They used to get a few threats chucked at them. But nevertheless, I'd avoided all that. And then Adolf, one of the German orderlies, came in one day, well, I like a book. I said, yes, please. And so he brought me a book, and it was Jerome K. Jerome's Three Men in a Boat, would you believe? Marvellous. So that was that. And then I got my clothes back, and then I was allowed to wander about the allocated part of the hospital. Of course, there were several British chaps there and several Americans. So we were just meandering about there until nothing more happened then. Until a few days after that, they collected us all up and put us in a bus and took us off to Dulagluft. We just put in the billets there, ordinary billets.
Now, can you describe the Dulagluft camp?
Well, it was like an ordinary camp. Had a mess hall, had a cookhouse with a staff. It had a permanent staff of RF chaps, which is rather strange. Really, both in the Home Art Sanatorium and also in Dulagluft itself. So it was quite an ordinary, with the two-tier bunks. It was quite an ordinary camp. We didn't get, there was Red Cross food there, but once again, we didn't get individual parcels issued to us.
And you went there still in September?
This was still in September, yes. Then on about the, we got there, I can't remember the exact date we actually got, went in to Dulagluft. But nevertheless, I was there only a few days. We got photographed with our number. We were given a number, and that was put on a ball around our neck. We were photographed, and our fingerprints were taken there. So now I now had a number, which was a POW number 6479. That was that. And then I had a very pleasant surprise one evening. It was just after tea, and I brought back with me a bit of cheese and a couple of biscuits for supper and to eat to bedtime. And a new lot of buds had just come in, a new lot of RAF chaps had just come in from the cells after their interrogation. And so I popped along to have a look to see if there's anybody I knew. And I went into this other room, and right at the end of the room, between the bunks, was an old ATC friend of mine, a chap named Peter Lucas, Ginger Lucas, we called him. And he was a bomb aimer. I'd known him in the Air Defence Cadet Corps, actually, when we joined in 1938. So he joined me up. He became a bomb aimer, and obviously being shot down, he'd had his interrogation. He was looking very scruffy and unshaven, of course. And so that was that. So I'd met a friend. And he was hungry, so I let him have my couple of biscuits and a bit of cheese. So that was that. So we, after about two or three days after that, they gathered us all together, that the intake that was there at the time, marched us off, issued us with a Red Cross parcel, I think one between two, and marched us down to Frankfurt Station, where we were put into cattle trucks. We had no idea where we were going. We obviously were going to a prison camp, but we didn't know where. And we were put into cattle trucks. Doors were bolted, and off we went. And it took us 5 days to get up to, eventually, East Prussia, as was.
What were conditions like in the cattle trucks?
The cattle trucks, they were very cramped. On this particular one that we were in, it had been carting potatoes or something, because there was about a half inch of dust on the floor of the thing. And any opening that they may have had in them were either covered up with boards or with barbed wire. And then when we were aboard, the doors were closed and locked. So it was very uncomfortable, really dark and uncomfortable and dirty.
Now, where were you going to? You're going to East Prussia, whereabouts?
We were going to a place called Heiderkrug in East Prussia.
Do you know how you spell that, or?
H-E-Y-D-E-K-R-U-G, I think that is, Heiderkrug. We'll soon check it out. On an incident that occurred, two incidents actually. The first one was about the second day out. On the way, on these journeys, they used to shunt you into sidings to let the ordinary trains go through. And we were in this particular siding, and I wanted to relieve myself. So they opened the door to let us out to relieve ourselves. And this blooming guard, he insisted on standing over me whilst I dropped my trousers. I wanted to go on the other side of the trucks against an embankment and away from, there was a train waiting a few yards away, full of people. Oh, they were looking out at us and pointing, and this guard wouldn't let me go through to have a bit of privacy on the other side. He made me drop my trousers in full view, standing over me with his Schmeisser pointing at my head, in full view of all these German civilians who were pointing and laughing at me. And that didn't go down very well with me, I'm afraid, because it seemed a deliberate attempt to humiliate me. So that was something that I didn't enjoy. And then about the next day, we were also again in a siding, letting trains go through. And the door was flung open, and a guard poked his head in, and he said, "Hi, fellas," in a very strong American accent, almost a Bronx accent. And he said, "What can I do for you?" I thought, that's a bit strange. So we started asking him questions. And we said, "Well, you know, you sound like an American. What are you doing here?" He said, "Well, I lived in America," he said, "but when the war broke out, I got some official message from Germany telling me to come home because my grandparents were ill." And he said, "When I got home, I got called up." That was his story anyway. So he said, "What can I do for you?" So we said, "Well, we'd like some hot water so we can make some coffee with this Red Cross coffee that we'd got." So he went to the engine and brought us some hot water, and of course, and then he got some straw for us to put on the floor. And of course, we were all so pleased about all this. What a splendid chat. So we showered him with cigarettes, and I said, "Imagine, he probably did this every time he did that duty." get a good supply of cigarettes. Anyway, it was helpful because we did get a hot brew, and also we got some straw on the floor, which was better. And also he brought us a candle, would you believe. So that was that. We never saw him again after that. The door was clang closed, and that was that. We eventually arrived up, as I say, after 5 days in these cattle trucks, up at Heiderkrug. Got out of the train there, at the sidings there, and we marched up to the camp. And when we went first of all into the Vorlager.
Now, this is Heiderkrug, Stalagluft 6.
6, yes. We went into the Vorlager where we had to strip off and get searched again.
Now, what was that a proper search? I mean.
Oh, yeah, strip search. Yeah, we had to strip off and get searched. And counted. And then from there, we got dressed, and then we were taken into this compound, the lager. This was K Lager, and it was a brand new lager. And there were two rows, there were six rooms in each row, so there's 12 rooms altogether, in two blocks. I went into K2, chose a bunk, and there were about 70 of us to a room. And so we filled the first three huts, K1, 2 and 3, roughly 200 of us in this new compound. Of course, we were all totally new prisoners, didn't have a clue about how to, what to do or to operate. So one or two pods got together. There was a cookhouse there where meals were prepared from the Red Cross stuff, tinned Red Cross stuff. And so the Canadians seemed to like to work in cookhouses, as did Australians for some reason. I suppose it was the outdoor aspect that they brought into play, I suppose. So they started something in the cookhouse. But a few days after that, we arrived, I think it was about the 5th of October at Luft 6. A few days after that, about 800 bods came in to fill the, to complete the compound, and they were from Luft 1, Starlight Luft 1 at Bath. So they'd purged about the camp at Bath and transferred them to this the new compound. So of course they were all seasoned Kriegers, so straight away they got things organised, and we had a ready-made camp leader then, Vic Clark. He'd come down with them from Bath, so everything got organised. They started. There was a hut. There were a couple of wooden admin huts at the end of the compound by the ablutions. And they turned that into a theatre, made seats and so on and so forth from the Canadian parcels.
We're sort of running ahead.
Are we? Right.
Can I just take you through some of the basics of? Can you describe your hut first? You know, in as much detail as you can in every way.
The hut was long. These huts were built of. They were like breeze blocks, but they weren't exactly breeze blocks. They were big blocks of cement and straw, they looked to be, and then they were just rendered in roughly inside and whitewashed. The bunks were down either side of the walls. There was a door at the front, wooden shutters on the windows, which were closed at night, and there was a door at the back, likewise with a window with shutters. And at the back, there was also a little built-on outbuilding which was the night latrine. There was a huge container there for a night latrine, which we had to empty every morning on a rotor system. I suppose you could say they were quite roomy. At each end there was a fireplace, but it was like a big hot plate. It was about, I think I've got the measurements there, roughly about 3 foot tall, possibly
6 by 4 by 4.
It was about 6 by 4 by 4, and it acted like a hot plate. But we couldn't. It wasn't very effective because we didn't have much coal, and what we did have, they were coal bricks of very poor quality, and they were severely rationed. So there wasn't much heat coming from these things at all, anyway. But there was one of those at each end of the hut of. And there were six of these huts in the block.
What were the beds like?
They were just two. We had two tier bunks with about six bed boards, which the palliasses, and they were filled with sawdust or wood wool, the palliasses. And we had two thin blankets issued to us, a German blanket issue, together with a bowl, China bowl, a mug, and a knife, fork and spoon.
Now, were you issued with any extra uniform to top up your kit?
Yes. We had when we arrived was what we'd been shot down in and what they'd given us back. But when the all these people came from Bath and the compound was full, the Red Cross came into play, uniforms started to get delivered. So I was issued with a great coat, a cap and underwear, and some underwear. So in effect, this is really what we wanted. Certainly a great coat, we needed that, and that's all I needed at the time. because my uniform was not too bad. Well, that had been damaged a bit, but it was okay.
So you just got what you needed.
So we got what we needed at that particular time. And then...
Now, what about pay? Because there's this allotment of pay that I didn't know
when
about.
You're soon after, once things were organised, we learned then through the Red Cross, everything came through the Red Cross of that particular type, we could make an allotment to our next of kin out of our pay. Because obviously once we were known to be prisoners of war, our pay continued. And any allotment that we'd made, for example, I made an allotment to my mother so much. It wasn't much at that time, but we could make out as much as we liked by filling in these forms, which went then through Geneva to the RAF at home, of our pay. So I made out 50% of my pay for my mother, help her pay the bills and so on. So that was organised, and I've got still got the documents about that.
And that worked, did it? Your mother got it?
Oh, yes, she got it, yeah. Yes, and it was actually backdated to the time I'd actually signed the form and so on. So that was good. That was something new that we'd all learned. We didn't know that could be done, but that was done and organised.
And what food did you get? What food and did you get from the Germans, in a way, and what food did you get from the Red Cross?
Well, the Red Cross parcels we had were in good supply at Hyderabad. They were coming in well at that time. We had American parcels.
And what would be, are they Red Cross as well?
They were Red Cross, yes.
Now, what would be in the parcels, and how did they differ?
The Red Cross parcels contained, if we just take, speaking generally, the American would contain coffee, margarine, biscuits, corned beef or Spam, cheese, and also in their parcels they pack cigarettes as well, cigarettes and powdered milk and chocolate, Hershey bar chocolate. They were the basic. They're about, I suppose, seven items in. I think that the whole thing weighed about £7.
Were there different types of Red Cross?
That were the American ones.
What else might you?
The Canadian ones were also excellent. That was butter, maple leaf butter, biscuits. I think we had tea. No, we had coffee in them as well. Coffee in them, biscuits, cheese, powdered milk again, and corned beef or Spam and similar. That's roughly the basics. But the English parcels were also good. So we had, in the English parcels, we had cheese, we had tea, as opposed to coffee, margarine, biscuits again, and sometimes bacon, tinned bacon, and stuff like that. And what else did we have? Oh, the dried fruit. There used to be dried fruit, either raisins or whatever. And so they were the basics. Now, in there, we had this cookhouse. So they went, when they were delivered, they went through to the cookhouse first of all, and they would take out the meats and stuff that they could deal with to make a meal for us. And they also kept the in the English parcel we had cocoa as well. So they used to keep all the stuff that you can make a brew with, coffee and tea, because they used to brew it up and they used to deliver it to the huts then, you see. And then they would, the German rations were potatoes, very small quantities of poor quality potatoes. I can recall, I think, twice, maybe three times when I was at Hyderabad, horse meat, just for one meal in one day. And that was all the German, now and again they send in this German jam. It was made of beetroot or something, and it was, anyway, That was their type of jam, what they call jam. But we used it because it supplemented our, augmented our other Red Cross rations. But that's all the Germans, they're supposed to, of course, according to the Geneva Convention, they're supposed to give POWs garrison rations, same sort of rations I gave the garrison troops. But this never occurred, quite frankly.
What about this Ersatz coffee? Did you get that?
The Ersatz coffee, yes, occasionally we got that. And it tasted a bit like coffee, but we all knew it wasn't coffee. Everybody knew it wasn't coffee. But nevertheless, we used it if it was there. If they delivered it to us, we used it. And sometimes they used to issue us with what they called table margarine, which was horrible and made from an oil product. And the chaps used to use that to make lamps.
What about the bread ration?
The bread ration was black bread, very hard. We got a loaf a day up at Heiderkrug. A loaf between eight. So you cut that as thin as you possibly could to get as many slices out of it as you could. So what we had for ourselves in the billet would be spreads, for example, jam. Sometimes in the British parcels we had jam for a spread, so that we could use these things in the billet, and together with our milk. The powdered milk came into us as well. Which was excellent, really excellent stuff. So that really was our food.
What was so good about the powdered milk?
Well, it was a jolly good flavour for a start, and it was very wholesome and healthy.
Was it a particular make?
In the American one, we had, on the Canadian, a stuff called Klim, which is milk backwards, Klim. That was good. Also, Hershey milk was good, and also Nestle's. So there were the three types that you could get in parcels.
Now, overall, was there enough food between the two sources?
No, there was never enough food. You're always hungry, because it wasn't, apart from the fact there was hardly any variety. There were no fresh vegetables. Twice up at Heiderkrug, the Germans sent in cabbage. Big white cabbages, you know, the close cabbages, which some of the chaps called cow cabbages for some reason. And our doc there, old Doc Hayes, he was an army doctor, been seconded to us. He told us to eat it raw to get more nutrition from it. But we only had, I can remember only getting that twice. So we're now, all the old Kriegers were there, and everything was settled down.